Jeff, this week's column is about batteries.
Yes, it is.
All right, sounds good. So what about batteries don't we know?
Well, so
there's actually a lot that I don't know about batteries.
So as we'll get to at the end, what inspired this column, I saw sort of what I thought was an exciting development in battery technology. And oftentimes when I'm writing Common Science, I think there are stories that maybe deserve more credit than they get. And batteries are really an important part of our lives. I mean, if you think about every smartphone has a battery. Mm-hmm. Hybrid cars are all based on batteries. If you have a pacemaker, it runs on a battery. And so, you know, many of these sort of modern technical innovations are, you know, based on improvements in battery technology. And there's one coming that we'll get to. But I thought, well, let's just sort of write a column about batteries.
All right, sounds good.
That's what I do.
You're saying that batteries is a general development in scientific technology that doesn't get enough credit. I know we've talked before about stories that get way too much media attention. Is there a story that gets exactly the right amount of media attention? There's got to be, like, mathematically, there's got to be some.
There could be.
It's really hard to think of them.
I mean, I guess you always, you know, you bring your own lens to looking at it, and you think, oh, well, that's not so important. Why are they talking about that
right,
all the time?
Right.
I mean, certainly perhaps the Donald Trump candidacy gets more coverage than it deserves.
Yes.
And batteries get less.
Bernie Sanders get less and batteries.
And
yeah.
Somewhere right in the middle. So let's talk about batteries.
Lindsey Graham got exactly the right amount
you go.
Of media coverage. There we go.
There you go. Right. Well done. Well done. So so let's just, we're going to walk through battery technology from sort of the more traditional to what's going to be more cutting edge. Mm. So let's just talk about if you get a battery from the store, you go and you buy a Duracell, your standard alkaline battery that you put in your flashlight or any home device. Mm. And so those batteries are all what's called an electrochemical cell.
Okay.
So it's divided in two sides, the anode, that's where the electrons come out of, and the cathode, where they'll go back in. Mm. And when the interesting thing about an electrochemical cell is you're converting chemical energy to electrical energy. And so anytime you have a chemical reaction, I mean, the basic, most basic definition of that is you have a couple of atoms that are swapping electrons, mm-hmm. and then forming different structures. And so what's really interesting about an electrochemical cell is on the one side, there's zinc and water that's in an alkaline solution. So that's mm-hmm. pH greater than 7.
Is it always specifically zinc or most of the time?
Most of the time. If you go to the store and you buy just an off-the-shelf
like
battery.
You're at the store counter.
It's almost always, there's zinc on the one side that's in an alkaline solution. So that's pH greater than 7. And then on the other side of the battery, the cathode where the electrons are going to end up are manganese oxide compounds. And so what's interesting thing about, to me at least, about that electrochemical cell is what's happening is the zinc is chemically reacting to form zinc oxide, and that's giving up electrons when that happens. Mm-hmm. And what's happening to the manganese, it's changing from MnO2 to Mn2O3.
Adding electrons.
So it's accepting them. But in this case, you've set things up, instead of putting them next to each other, where you'd have that chemical reaction occurring all together, you've segregated them into two parts of the battery, and you're letting those electrons flow through the wire to mm-hmm. the other side. So that's...
And it's that electron transfer that,
So the chemical reactions are driving it, and that electron's flowing through the wire, that's electricity.
Right.
All right, so if I put the light bulb in my flashlight or...
Somewhere along that
along that path,
yep.
those electrons are flowing from one side to the other, and I can light up my, you know, again, we'll go with the flashlight. So...
It's fascinating that we're just describing, like, this is a battery that you buy, and it's next to the People magazine, basically.
Yes.
And it's this unbelievably complicated, complex, nuanced,
all kinds of
invisible
interesting stuff going on
that requires hundreds of years of research and development in order to make it possible. And you can pick it up at CVS.
Yeah, for $1.50.
For like $1.50, yeah.
So on that one side, so the key part of the battery, is the anode that's making the electrons mm-hmm. that flow through the circuit and do whatever you want the battery to do. But in a regular battery, as that zinc is being converted to zinc oxide to make those electrons, after you've converted the bulk of that zinc to zinc oxide, you know, it's done, right? Now I got to take that battery and I'm going to run it up to Eubanks Road and put it in the battery recycling. And that's
if
what you
you're
should
good
be doing.
About it,
that's
yeah,
what I do.
Say,
I have a box where I collect all my old batteries. So they've been around a long time. They're they're useful, they're once and done.
Mm-hmm.
They only generate 1.5 volts. That's characteristic of that chemistry. So they're safe. You know, mm-hmm. you can put them in kids' toys, and,
right.
and that's been around for a long time. But they're the downfall there is they're single use.
Right.
Okay, so the next evolution was rechargeable batteries.
Yes.
And there's a longer explanation in the column that we probably won't have time for here. But rechargeable batteries are also electrochemical cells. And so the most common is called a lithium-ion battery,
mm-hmm.
and that's in almost every smartphone and almost every plug-in hybrid car.
Right.
And
really makes that technology possible,
yeah.
because if it weren't for the rechargeable battery, a cell phone would be unwieldy. It'd have to carry around. It would be like carrying around a Walkman in the 80s, where you'd have to carry around six changes of batteries the whole time.
Yeah, exactly what I was thinking about. And you'd have to throw them out every day.
Right.
And so I go through all of the chemistry in the column, but essentially with a rechargeable battery, you're having chemical energy. It's lithium-ion batteries have graphite on one side in the cathode, and they have lithium cobalt oxide on the other.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens in that case in the alkaline battery? Once you created the zinc oxide, it was once and done. You can't recover that.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, you can reverse the chemistry that occurs in the battery by plugging it into the wall.
Okay.
Right. So I can drive.
Yeah. How does that work?
Okay.
I'm going to regret having just asked that question.
Okay. All right. So on the one side of the battery, I have it's lithium cobalt oxide. So it's just a metal oxide. On the other side, I have graphite, which is all carbon. If I plug that into the wall and I charge it, so I'm running the current backwards through that battery,
right.
some of the lithium in the lithium cobalt oxide gets torn out. It gets liberated, so it's free lithium. And then it'll diffuse across the solvent that separates those two sides, and it forms lithium carbide compounds.
Okay.
So that's all the time you're charging it. The lithium's wandering from one side to the other and creating lithium carbide compounds in the graphite.
I guess
plugging it in and then you put it in a circuit,
it just
the electrons
backwards.
Go back through the circuit, and at the same time, then the lithium goes back over to the other side.
Yeah. I guess my question is, why doesn't it work with non-rechargeable batteries?
You need to pick. I mean, that's the beauty of the lithium cobalt oxide on the one side, right? If you apply electric charge to it, so if you give it extra electrons, it will decompose.
Gotcha. Which doesn't happen
with the zinc oxide. It's stable, and you can't reverse it.
Okay.
And so you can keep doing that many, many times, but every once in a while, like every time the lithium goes over to the graphite, and then you want it to decompose. The compounds it formed that comes back, every time some of it doesn't make it
back.
You
lose a little bit, right?
Some of it gets stuck over in the graphite forever, and so that's why you have a limited number of charge cycles.
Yeah.
But again, a tremendously
I do not regret useful. Asking that question.
Well,
that's good.
I'm
For
glad.
For a second I thought I was going to. You
I was
got
concerned,
that like, wild-eyed look in your eye.
I thought I might go into a technical hole there, but I think we steered clear.
That makes sense. Okay, so that's where batteries stand that we know of.
Yeah. Now, there's another kind of battery, and if there's a physicist listening, you're going to say, well, Jeff, that's not really a battery, but there's also capacitors.
Mm-hmm.
Now, capacitors are really interesting, and that's where battery technology is going. Now, they've been around forever. And a capacitor is made of two metal plates, a traditional one, two metal plates separated with a piece of ceramic.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can't generate its own electrons like an electrochemical cell like we've been talking about, but it can store them. So if I apply a voltage from a battery or from a wall outlet to a capacitor, one of those metal plates will develop a negative charge, and the other one will acquire a positive charge. And once I've done that, now I can use it like a battery. It'll discharge through a circuit. And capacitors are used in circuits all of the time. They do two really important things. Like every electric device you have, that computer, your TV, your phone, capacitors dampen spikes of voltage, which happen all the time when you plug something in. So they prevent the stuff behind it from getting fried. But the really nice thing about a capacitor is it'll also discharge instantaneously.
Mm-hmm.
Like an alkaline battery can only create electrons as fast as zinc turns into zinc oxide. But you can get a capacitor to discharge like that. There,
nice.
That was me snapping my fingers near the microphone. Well, yeah. I hope that sound went out over the radio.
I heard it. I don't know if anyone else did. I am sitting right next to you, but I think I heard it through the headphones.
So there are some circuits where you really need a fast discharge of electrons. So, for example, cameras. Mm-hmm. If you know how sometimes you have to wait for it tells you the flash is ready?
Right.
Well, the battery's charging the capacitor, which takes a little while. And then you click the button to make the flash. Well, that capacitor can discharge its electrons through the bulb of the flash instantaneously. Like that.
Very nice.
And you can make a flash. And so capacitors have been around a long time. And the nice thing about them is nothing happens to them. There are no moving parts. There's no degradation. They last effectively forever. Mm-hmm. So you think, I can charge one up. Why don't capacitors replace rechargeable batteries?
Yes.
Well, the answer is energy density.
Okay. Like it always is.
But
energy density.
Energy density is really just how many electrons can be stored or supplied per unit volume. Mm-hmm. So batteries have a really high energy density. And so you can have a little battery, and it'll still fit in your smartphone, and it'll still fit in your car. But capacitors with current technology have lower energy density.
So they've got to be much, much bigger.
Yes, you'd have to have a massive cell phone, or it wouldn't fit in the car like the batteries do now.
It's got to be the size of a fancy 1980s novelty vehicle.
Yeah, it's just impractical. So the ultimate rechargeable battery would be like a capacitor, no moving parts, no degradation, but would have the energy density of a battery. And if we could do that, you could charge it immediately. Imagine if you could charge your cell phone in 4 seconds.
Yeah.
That it would still last all day.
Right.
Or even more interestingly, if you could take your plug-in hybrid car and it would charge only in several minutes. Mm-hmm. Right now, people with plug-in hybrids have to plug them in at home, or perhaps they work someplace where they can plug it in at their office.
But that's one of the things that's keeping the hybrid vehicle technology from really taking off, is there's got to be this whole infrastructure that's built up around it.
Right. But if your car would charge in a few seconds or under a minute, every gas station in the United States has
plug
power.
Right there. Yeah.
And they are deployed geographically for cars that have about a range of 300 or 400 miles.
Right.
Well, if you had a car that ran that, they do now with the rechargeable batteries.
Yeah.
But if you could have a capacitor in there that would run for 300 or 400 miles and charge in under a couple of minutes, just like a gas tank, you could use those stations, and
for just a regular gas station to just have a plug-in station.
So before we run out of time here, there are some really fascinating new things called supercapacitors that people are working on. And these are made from nanotechnology materials that you and I have talked about before. But in particular, people are making capacitors out of carbon nanotubes.
Okay.
So that's like a little tube. It's only one carbon atom thick.
Okay.
They are made all the time, and they have many other current uses.
If it's only one carbon atom thick, what fits electrons?
Oh, we're just using it for electrical conductivity. Yep. And then the other piece of the supercapacitor is sheets of graphene, which are sheets of carbon one atom thick.
Okay.
And as we've talked about in the past, when you make things at that nanoscale, they have different electrical properties than at the macro scale. Like a pencil lead is made of graphite, but it doesn't carbon atoms. It doesn't conduct electricity, but graphene is different. So they're building these different sort of different layers of carbon nanotubes and sheets of graphene and finding that they are able to build really interesting capacitors with the potential to have the energy density of a battery or better.
Okay.
Now, the really fascinating thing about, capacitors in general, as I said, they charge immediately, they last forever. But carbon, even if you make nanotubes and graphene out of it, it's everywhere, and it's cheap, and it's flexible. And so the ultimate plug-in hybrid car with one of these supercapacitors, you wouldn't even have to devote a large part of the under the hood or under the trunk for the battery, because these are light and flexible. The idea would be to build it right into the body of the car.
Okay.
And so within the within all of the structure of the car, you could store capacitance and build a lighter, faster, more economically viable.
We can build it. We have the technology.
We do.
All right. So what's the time frame on this? Is there something we'll see?
That's a tough question. I mean, really, the article that caught my attention was published by two researchers at MIT. Mm-hmm. But they're not doing it, you know, these usually, I think what the standard is like 30 years from the initial discovery in the lab until commercialization.
Right, right.
But this is well beyond the initial, I can't quote you at the moment, but it's been 10 or 15, 20 years since we started working with carbon nanotubes.
So people have been working on this for a while.
So they're not looking at the laboratory scale of, like, what are the electrical properties of a carbon nanotube.
Yeah.
They're much farther down in building actual, you know, three-dimensional monoliths of these material that they're using for supercapacitors. Mm-hmm. So that puts them much farther down, more into sort of the engineering phase than the invention phase.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I'm rambling until I can come up
this
with an answer.
This is interesting because...
I'd say we're 10 years out.
Yeah. And this could potentially at least be like the next generation of hybrid cars that turns the corner.
Yeah, hybrid cars. This could make hybrid cars viable. It would be a real boon to the technology industry because everyone would go buy a new smartphone.
Right, right.
Whether that's a good thing
they're
for the world
do that
or
anyway
not.
Or not.
But like, this would be another inspiration.
The iPhone 24 is going to be huge.
I was going to include a section. It would also, these types of supercapacitors would have a really tremendous impact on solar and wind power. Mm-hmm. And I started to write about that in the column, and the column was already starting to get a little bit long. But again, the idea with solar and wind power is, you know, the sun's not always shining and the wind isn't always blowing.
Right.
And so you need a cost-effective battery or capacitor to store that energy. Well, if capacitors became much better and much cheaper, again, that would be a boon to renewable energy. So
all right.
I want you to remember that I started 2016 with
an optimistic
column.
Yeah, I was just about to say it's so often pessimistic, but this is hopeful for the future.
So there you have it.
We're going to look back at the end of this year and we'll see how much farther we are.
I'll get back to doom and gloom soon, I'm sure.
All right,
don't worry.
All right. And we're speaking with Jeff Danner. You can check out the column right now on our website, chapelboro.com, right there on the right hand side of the page. Scroll down, you get the link to the column on supercapacitors. What is up for next week?
So next Sunday, when I publish, is my 50th birthday.
Ooh.
So I've already titled the column for next Sunday. I usually do that at the last minute. So the title for next week's column, with a little bit of a nod to Jimmy Buffett, is An Engineer Looks at 50.
50. All right. Sounds good. I'll look forward to that. And I'll look forward to a very special Common Science 1 week from today.
Well, I'm looking forward to it as well.
All right. Jeff Danner, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron.